The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. To episode 32 of Comics League International. I'm Brent. We've had a little bit of a hiatus. This is the first episode I'm recording in a few months, so hopefully I won't, you know, crack up and just mess up the huge reputation that I know I've earned. With me, I have a guest, Lydia Queck from Queck Channel on YouTube. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did. Oh, thank you. Hi.
No problem. Thank you for joining me. So you and I, we've known each other for a few years now, but probably yes, closer on the acquaintance level, I think.
That's right.
I think it's known
fair each other
to say.
4 years, because that's years. When I first came to Japan. I came to Japan in 2011. And you were I can't remember what you call it.
It was the ALT advisor, which
really
means I made some of the conferences that you would attend, and worked in a high school at the time.
Yes, I did.
So mm-hmm. I think we also would see each other when there was like the high school groups, and the guy who was actually in charge of those meetings was like, would you mind leading those meetings so I don't have to worry about it? And I was like, sure, I like talking in front of people.
Yeah, that was when I knew that there was this guy called Brent who would always appear at big conferences.
yeah, that's basically it. And you know, then some people would kind of get that, like, ooh, it's Brent, he's a boss. And it's like, no, I'm not. I'm just the guy who works in a different office, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And have to wear a tie a bit more regularly. But that was it.
Mm-hmm. I think the first time that we really got to talk maybe was went over Facebook.
Yeah. I think so too. That was kind of the first thing, because I know when we lived in the same area,
you never met.
Well, yeah, because I was in the center of the prefecture and kind of and fairly newly married. And were you in Ota? Ota,
so,
okay.
If you're talking driving, we would have been an hour away apart from each other.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which for me is just, it's far.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And Gunma's big.
it is, and anything that takes like a changing of train lines or more than 20 minutes, I'm just like, that's forever. How far is that? It's forever. Mm-hmm. But we're not exactly here to talk about Gunma geography, even though that's where I steered the conversation.
Yes.
We're here to talk some comics.
Yay!
I know. I'm excited. The main reason I started this podcast, like I tell people, it's I want to, you know, discuss comics and educate about comics, but mostly it's just because I just love talking about them.
Mm-hmm.
But before we talk to comics, what's your background with comics?
Okay. I think the very first comics in English that I ever really enjoyed was the Archie comics.
Awesome.
Right. So Archie comics, you know, were the ones that sort of got me started. And so that was like my introduction to English comics. I had always been reading Japanese comics translated into Chinese because
you're from?
I'm from Singapore, that's right. And there was a time where I did not understand Japanese, so I had to read the Chinese translations of the Japanese comics to understand what was going on.
So what roughly how old were you when you started even reading those, like the manga in Chinese?
Oh, I was maybe 10.
Okay, okay.
Yes, yes. I was definitely in primary school at that time.
What type of stuff did you like?
Oh, wow. It was very, what they call, shoujo manga.
Oh, yeah, the manga for girls.
The girly one, yes, the girly ones. And it was very age-appropriate, I think. It was targeted to kids. It was those type of...
So we're not talking like the boys love girls comics.
No, we are not. It's entirely... It was like the... Some of them are still my favorites, even though I'm like, what, and I'm almost 30.
how dare you like that childish stuff? Now back to Star-Lord.
Okay.
Oh, wait, I wasn't supposed to say that. Maybe I did. I don't know. But no. I mean, yeah, that's the thing, is some of the stuff that's made for kids.
Yes.
I mean, when it's well done, it doesn't matter how old you are when you read it. It still captures those moments.
Yes, most definitely. So that was the first... That was my first foray into the world of comics.
I think it's fun that you went from that brand, the shoujo manga, to Archie.
Yes, I
mean, it seems like a very nice stepping stone.
Really,
I mean, maybe I just haven't read enough girls comics to kind of get.
I see. I guess that is true because they are both very. Clean. The humor in it is very clean, and I've suddenly had this flashback that there was this set of comics that my god grandmother it's quite complicated my god grandmother passed down to me, and she those comics were from the 70s, I think. Mad Magazine.
Mad Magazines, wow, the classics.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed those.
Yeah, because I read a lot of Mad Magazine in the 80s, and right. I mean, I think depending on what I've, you know, read as an adult, kind of like the 70s is 60s and 70s is where Mad Magazine was kind of at its height of like referential humor and also kind of just satire and really setting the tone of what a satire-ish magazine should be.
I remember I picked up the word grub from Mad Magazine to mean food, you know. that set of magazines that my god-grandmother passed down to me. That definitely from there. I remember it was the first time I had ever seen that word used in that context.
I mean, but at least when I read Mad Magazine, like I said, in the early to mid 80s, it was lots of like movie parodies and just lots of like references to pop culture. And yeah, I mean, of course, like Spy versus Spy and a few features and stuff like that. So I'm just kind of wondering about was it the same way during the 70s or?
I have no, I guess so, because it was so long ago. It was, wow, it was probably more about 20 years ago that I read those magazines.
Excellent.
So, and 20 years ago it was what, the 90s?
And 20, yeah.
So 90. In the 90s I was reading magazines from the 70s. I was like, what, 7 years old? So I don't know if they were, even if it was satire, I probably wouldn't have understood it.
Gotcha. See, yeah, because the 90s, I was born in 81, so I would have been like 12, 13 or so in like 93. I just wrote a review of the first episode of X-Files just for the fun of it.
That creeped me out. I remember it airing on TV. Okay.
Yeah. Wait, so you went from shoujo manga to a little bit of Archie and then I guess Mad Magazine?
Yeah, no, it was... I probably have to say Mad Magazine was first because... Okay. But it was, it's so fuzzy now I didn't remember it when you asked me. So Mad Magazine, and then shoujo manga, and I have to say shoujo manga and Archie comics kind of overlapped. And shoujo manga hasn't really left its existence in my life. Has been very consistent. Yes.
Excellent. Wow. So wait, was the Archie in English or Chinese?
English. Yes. It would be weird. I've never seen an Archie in Chinese.
Yeah,
maybe that... Texas. I don't know.
See, I'm just thinking about that, pondering.
Huh. Yeah.
Well, so what did you have a next step after those that you were looking for?
Oh, definitely. I moved on to all sorts of Japanese comics.
any favorites?
Definitely. There's this one that everyone overlooks. It's called Flame of Rekka. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's very cool. Record? Flame of Rekka. Rekka.
Oh, Rekka.
Is like fire, you know, fiery fire. That's my absolute favorite Japanese my absolute favorite comic.
We'll have to look for that. See how it goes. So, and today we're going to be talking about some superheroics from Marvel Comics.
Yes. Yes. Excited.
You know, we talked a little bit on Facebook, and you know, you kind of said you've enjoyed. I basically said like, what Marvel movies have you liked? And I forget if it was your favorite or near the top, but you said Guardians of the Galaxy.
I did. I would say after watching Ant-Man is probably tied in first place with Guardians of the Galaxy.
I still haven't watched Ant-Man.
No!
I know. It came out like right around the time I was doing a summer camp job.
Oh, okay.
So it just... I forget like if it was just... in the lead up to it, so I was kind of busy, or in the middle of camp, was like, the only thing I'm doing home on the weekends when I'm not in camp is basically sleeping. Mm. And I still haven't seen it. I don't even know if it's playing anywhere in Tokyo right now.
Oh, I see.
Like, I'm kind of just saying, like, if I wait like another 2-3 weeks, maybe a month, it'll probably be on iTunes.
It would.
And then I can watch it, like, while laying in bed. And isn't that everyone's dream, really?
It is. I would like that, but there is also the thrill of visiting the theater, except in Japan it's so expensive.
That is kind of the thing of like, do I really want to pay up to maybe, you know, $20 to $30 US to watch
a movie that's not even 2 hours long?
Yeah.
Maybe if it was Titanic or something, I would pay that 1,000 yen.
If not Titanic, or maybe that's why you chose Titanic. If it's just, you know, it's a movie you love.
That's true.
You know, like,
which is why I always go to the theater to watch all the Marvel movies.
Yeah, I want to say I love them all, but there's, you know, my love is fickle. I definitely like some of them, and some I think are amazing. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not sure if I'd say Guardians. I think I'd have to go with Captain America Winter Soldier.
Oh.
It's just so far my favorite.
Right. I like that one. You know, I like all the ones that are produced by Marvel Studios. Mm-hmm. I don't really care for the ones that are produced by, like, I don't know, Fox or something.
Yeah. Like, I keep on... I haven't even gotten around to watching the most recent X-Men one because I just... I think X-Men hasn't impressed me since X2.
Oh, that's a long time ago.
I know. People tell me I dislike too much stuff, but I just say I have standards.
That's a good way to put it.
But Guardians of the Galaxy, that was fun.
Yes.
That was a fun one. And when I heard you said that, I kind of thought like, well, the current crop to me as a guy who just said he dislikes way too much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The current crop of Guardians comics, I mean, they're good. You know, he said trying to be political when he doesn't really like them. but where this current batch started off, which is kind of what we read today, I think is just so much better. And so that's why what I asked you to read was... And it's way too long of a title. Yeah. Annihilation. Conquest. Star-Lord. The miniseries.
Okay.
And I guess maybe what we should start out with is, without really going too much into it at first, okay, just a quick, what'd you think? Was it fun? Was it terrible? Was it just a quick overview?
The first word that comes to mind is that it was confusing. Because I think, as someone who is actually very new to Marvel comics, mm-hmm, and having watched the movies, I mean, there are characters that I recognize, but most of what was in the comics wasn't in the movie at all.
No.
So that really threw me off. And another pressing question was, what is the Uniforce? I'm serious. What? That was, I mean, it was so awesome. I'm assuming that all the listeners know what Annihilation Conquest Star-Lord is.
You'd be surprised. Some people are probably going to like call me and be like, you know, Brent, if you want people to enjoy comics, maybe you should start off with something a little user-friendly.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. It was enjoyable, but yeah, it was. Like, it was enjoyable, but coming from a very, you know, movie audience side of things, it was confusing.
No, that makes sense, because I mean, this, you know, there's Star-Lord, but the Star-Lord in this and the Star-Lord in the movies are two very different people, I would say.
Right. And not only him, the characters in the movie and the characters in the comic that I read that you sent me are very different.
Because I think the characters who share both worlds, we've got Star-Lord, we've got Rocket Raccoon and Groot.
Yes.
And I think those are the only three. But whether or not those interpretations line up, I mean, that's maybe a different story.
Yes, I mean, Groot.
Yeah.
Groot was such a diva in the comics.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Surprised me. It was so surprising. Because in the movie, he was like this, he had this limited vocabulary, and he could only, and he it was like he was the giving tree, almost literally. So... But it was not like that in Annihilation Conquest Star-Lord.
And I think we should just keep on saying the full title every time we have to say it, just to make sure everyone knows that we're not talking about the current Star-Lord or the relaunch Star-Lord or the original Star-Lord. We're talking about
Annihilation Conquest
Star-Lord. Numbers 1 through 4.
Yeah.
This came out in 2007.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, this was a time in comics where, you know, I'd been living in Japan for a little bit, and wasn't really reading comics because, you know, I didn't know about too much of the digital options. And I wasn't sure how long I'd be here, so I wasn't buying anything and didn't have, you know, the Amazons figured out. But then, you know, when I went back to the States for a visit, one of my comics friends just handed me these three huge volumes of like the oversized ones, which was the first Annihilation.
Right.
Because Annihilation Conquest is a sequel to Annihilation. That really, the only kind of sequel is the fact of like, hey, you remember those things we were doing with the characters in space? Here's more stuff with characters in space!
Exactly.
Yeah. And he was like, you're going to love it. Sit down and read it. And I did. And so when Conquest came out, or maybe it was already out, yeah, I guess it would have been already been out, but when I found copies of the Conquest oversized stuff, I had to be like, I have to get these. They're great.
I see.
Please.
Yeah, it's written on the front cover that it came out in 2011.
Well, I think that is the date of the because we've been sharing some of the digital copies. I mean, you know, it's kind of like lending a friend a comic,
right?
But the comic, I think that's either like when that edition of the digital one came out, or you know, because it was published according to Marvel.com.
Mm-hmm.
It was published on July 25th, 2007, and then added to Marvel Unlimited July 17th, 2008. And you know, what they might have done is either done a new scan or a cleaned up higher resolution version of the comics in 2011.
Oh, I see. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now, before we started recording, you mentioned you just had questions about the comic.
Yes.
What was it?
What is the Uniforce? Okay, because after reading it, I realized that, wow, this Uniforce thing, it played such a big part in, you know, saving the characters and and helping them complete the mission. But what is it? Why is it inhabiting a human? And why does that, what is his name, that guy, what is
Captain Universe?
Yes. Why does Gabe, right? Why does Gabe have it in the first place? And why can it be transferred? And I'm sorry, I'm just like throwing all the questions all around. And in the beginning, they were all locked up in some sort of jail, right? And why? You know?
All of that stuff, with the Uniforce. Basically, here's all I know about the Uniforce.
Okay.
Is it's a force, like a cosmic thing, that every now and then floats around and hits someone, and they get like super mega powers for a little bit until it moves on. The only reason I know that stuff is because sometime, I think it was in the early 80s, Spider-Man got the Universe powers, or the Uniforce powers, and became Spidey Universe or Captain Universe Spidey.
Okay.
And when they get those powers, they get that kind of color scheme where it's like the white bottoms and like the blue top with the little star thingy.
Yes.
And so it was Spider-Man flying around punching people.
Oh.
And as a kid, I was like, whoa, Spider-Man's flying.
Mm-hmm.
And then, honestly, I think more of what I've read, the biggest lasting image I have of the Uniforce, there was a Marvel comic character called Peter Porker, the Amazing Spider-Ham.
Oh my.
Which has kind of come back a little bit, but it's basically, it's a Marvel's parody of Spider-Man, where all the characters are anthropomorphic.
Oh my.
And it's Spider-Ham. He's a pig.
Oh dear. Okay.
And I had an issue of like Marvel Tales or something where Peter Porker got the Uniforce powers.
Peter Porker picked a peck of
It's just as brilliant as you as it's amazing. We should have reviewed that if you want. But I mean, and so basically, as far as I can tell, the Uniforce is just kind of like, hey, look, someone superpowered for a little bit, and now that plot element goes away. We had our fun, we told our story. And as for the other stuff, like, what's great kind of about the Marvel cosmic of this era is no one cared. Like, because a lot of the characters in this, you know, they kind of, they do a reference to the Dirty Dozen, right?
Okay.
Have you ever seen the movie The Dirty Dozen?
No, but I've heard of it.
Oh, yeah, it's a great war movie where it is this idea. It's, here's a group of prisoners. If they go complete a mission, they kind of get free.
Oh.
And so all the prisoners in this are basically characters who, and even Star-Lord at this point, it's characters whose no one has really used in a while. Like, I don't think Rocket Raccoon had really done anything since maybe the 80s on a big scale. I'm not even sure if Groot's last appearance may have been in, like, a Strange Tales comic from before Marvel Comics was officially Marvel Comics. Someone out there more knowledgeable in the Golden Age stuff. But these are all people that no one ever really cared about. Like, Mantis, I don't think had been... Only one creator really used Mantis. And when he's not using her, no one really touched her. Bug was... As from what I can tell from Bug, he was a character that Marvel created, but was used in a line of Marvel comics that were for a toy company. So it's like, we own this character, but the world he inhabited is the Micronauts, and those are for toys, so we're not, so the universe hadn't been done anything. It's kind of like, hey, here's a bunch of characters no one really remembers or cares about, or might even be new. So they're just kind of there.
I never knew that. Interesting.
And then it's just, how can we use these characters to kind of tell a fun, I don't know, war story?
May I ask another question?
Oh, of course.
Okay. There's this part where I was really confused. Ronan. Ronan thinks very highly of Star-Lord, right? Why?
For that, you should go read Annihilation. Basically, you remember Ronan from the Guardians movie, right?
Yes.
I like that interpretation of Ronan, and it kind of works. Ronan is basically, you know, he's one of the big, powerful muckety-mucks of Kree. And during the Annihilation, it really was, here's a bunch of the kind of, think of Marvel Cosmic of this point and beforehand, of the cosmic meaning basically their outer space characters, as kind of being like the B-list or even C-list at best heroes. Like, they would be the characters that, like, you know, hey, look, here comes Star-Lord. Ha! My name's Star-Lord. Well, this issue's over. You're not going to see me for years. Like, that would be, you know, that would be the extent of them. And then in Annihilation, they just kind of said, like, we've got all these characters. Why don't we do something interesting with them just to see if people buy it?
Right. I kind of get it. It's like fan fiction by the creators.
Basically, yeah. Or like, did you ever watch Lost?
No. It was, I mean, I know quite a lot about it because it was everywhere, but yeah. I never watched it.
Okay, well, then thanks for messing up that analogy. Well, imagine, like, basically think of any TV show ever where, yeah, you have the main characters, and then you have the recurring characters, or like, you watched Friends, right?
Yes.
Imagine if Gunther from the coffee shop was suddenly featured. Like, here's Gunther, and here's a few of the other people who we see often on Friends, but they usually just serve to be like, hey, Monica, how was your day? Bad? Oh, that's disappointing. Ba-dum. And then kind of spotlighting them, much like fan fiction, I guess.
Let's see. I never knew. Isn't this something like what the TV station was, the TV station that does Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., ABC? Was it ABC?
I don't know. I don't see it online.
Anyway, isn't that what they're doing with Phil Coulson?
Kind of, I guess. I only watched the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Because it seems like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would be perfect for this, of like spotlighting those like C and D characters and kind of showing the broader world. But from all I remember watching it is they never actually did that. They're like, hey, let's keep on focusing on our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. plots that don't really do much.
I see. It's changed a lot, though.
I've heard Seasons 2 is a lot better.
Season 2 is a lot better. I'm thinking of the current season, which is fantastic.
Is it?
The current season is the best one. You have to get here to really feel...
I gotta watch them. Because I will admit, like, even watching Season 1...
Mm-hmm.
Once Winter Soldier came out and it felt like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. could progress, it got a lot better. But until then, it just kind of felt like they're just standing around.
Yes, Season 1 did have that feeling. Yeah. I totally concur.
So with Star-Lord, there's a lot of confusion, and there was a lot of... I mean, this is... One of the key things I think you kind of have to go into almost any comic is you're just not going to know stuff. It's just kind of like there's 40, 50, sometimes more years of continuity. Some of it matters. Some of it doesn't. And sometimes those things change even in the middle of, like, a series.
Okay. I can live with that.
Yes. But, now, here's something that I was wondering what your take on it would be, because, you know, I reread this, and, I mean, I think this is a super fun comic. Mm-hmm. But as I was rereading it, like, normally when I've read Annihilation Conquest Star-Lord, issues 1 through 4, normally when I... From 2007, normally... Oh, we haven't said... Written by Keith Giffen with art by Timothy Green, because Timothy Green, I like. He kind of comes and goes, you know, but Keith Giffen, fantastic creator.
Okay.
Keith Giffen, yeah. But one of the things I notice is normally when I read this, it's kind of like when I pull out those tomes and like, I'm going to reread the entirety of Annihilation Conquest or both Annihilations. And this was the first time I think I've read only this series just to read this series. And I kind of noticed that, yeah, it doesn't really have a plot.
Oh, I mean, it probably does, but it's a very weak one.
Yeah.
It was just... this guy has to put together a team to... What? What was it with the contagion? He had... I know they got it in the end.
Yeah, to go blow stuff up or get stuff or... You know, because there's... I can't remember if part of the mission at the beginning... And I just read this, like, 2 hours ago. But I can't remember if at the beginning of the story it was to go get the airborne thing, or if during the mission they found out the contagion was airborne that was turning people, like, making it easier for the robots to take them over.
Yes.
But, I mean, it kind of feels like none of that was really important in the end.
You know what? I think if... It's because it's a comic. That's why we feel like it's not... It might not be engaging enough. Mm-hmm. But essentially, that's what the Mission Impossible movies are, isn't it? I mean, it's just go complete a mission.
True. Now, to me, even though, like I just said, I don't think there's much of a plot here, I love reading it because I think the strength of this storytelling is I could just read these characters bicker with each other.
Yes, I totally agree. I really like the characters, even though I, you know, with all the influence from the movies and everything, but it was fun. It was fun to see. I'm a big fan of character development, so I was really, really... The thing that really drew me to this comic was... Were the characters. The characters. The thing was. So...
The thing isn't in this comic. He was in Fantastic Four. Oh, wait, sorry. That was...
Yes. I really liked... My favorite character was Groot in the movies. And yet over here, I think it might have been Rocket Raccoon.
I love Rocket Raccoon. I love his like... I'm not sure if the other ones did this as well, but I always forget about the gag of he keeps washing stuff because he's a raccoon. And so he keeps washing things and cleaning them.
It wasn't in this one.
Oh, it was totally in this, and it was a great little gag. I'm thinking, like, did the other issues, did they go back to that? But I just, haven't you cleaned that gun enough? No!
Oh, just, okay, I'm not sure if I caught that.
Like, at least in every issue, there's a reference to him cleaning things.
You know what? It's because I didn't grow up with, a very strong consciousness about raccoons because we didn't have them in Singapore. And thinking about the Japanese name for it, it's like Araguma or something like that, right?
Is it Araguma? Araiguma? Araiguma? It's one of those, but it's like the washing bear.
Yeah, exactly. And now that you... So that's what they do.
Yeah, you know, because when raccoons get, like, food, they'll like, rinse it in water and kind of clean it off a little bit. And
Okay.
There you go.
I see.
So that's why he kept doing it. It's just a recurring gag that's cute.
Oh.
I think the Celestial Madonna, Mantis...
Mantis, the one with the things.
The antennas.
The one that looks like Shrek's cousin?
Yeah. Who is the Celestial Madonna?
Okay. Jeez. I'm going to go back to that page. Why is she called the Celestial Madonna? Why? What's the...
It's a long story.
Okay. Is there something... What's the name of the story?
If Celestial Madonna.
Really?
It's basically... was this Englehart? It's a little before my time of comics, but it's basically the creator of Mantis basically made her to be a character who eventually gives birth to a space god. And it's... Like, it's got all types of craziness, and when this character moved comic companies in a way, he just basically, like, I'm going to keep writing these stories wherever you send me. Like, oh, I'm not on this title, I'm on this title? Well, guess who's showing up?
okay.
And it's one of those things, so it's like, yeah.
What you just said, it sounds so much like Greek mythology.
Basically.
Right? Okay.
And this is written after, I guess, the Celestial Madonna character. Because it's kind of the point, like, I'm not even sure if in continuity, if Mantis is Vietnamese or not.
Oh. Wait, really?
Yeah. Because at one point she was.
Oh.
But then they went further with the Celestial Madonna and got the Deedly Boppers and the green skin.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if she just became that way, or if that was when she unlocked her cosmic powers. Because I've seen her with green skin and no deedly boppers. I've seen her with human skin and deedly boppers. And I've seen her green with the deedly boppers.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. But you know, I don't know. Reading these comics has made me want to read more, so...
Excellent. Jump into one of my follow-up questions. Now, here's a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Since you mentioned a lot of confusion with what came back and mentioning want to read more, would you want to... And this isn't going to be like, hey, you get to choose one. This is kind of like, I'm just curious. We're just talking here.
Okay.
Would you rather go back to... the start of the whole, like, Marvel Cosmic Rebirth to see where it got to this point, or would you rather keep moving forward to kind of... Because the next big thing that happens in comics continuity from this is the conquest ends, and guess what? The heroes win.
Mm-hmm.
And then... some of the members of this group go on to form the core team of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm.
And it's that relaunch of Guardians of the Galaxy that kind of more serves as the movie ones, even though not quite.
Okay.
So basically you could either move forward or move back.
I would definitely go back because I need some backstory. I would think that would serve me better because I would then have all the equipment I need to tackle, you know, whatever's coming next.
Awesome.
Yes.
Definitely, if you get a chance to read any of the Annihilation stuff.
Okay.
I think it would probably be and this I guess actually goes for the listeners as well who may have been reading or watching Guardians and wanting to know more. I think starting off with Annihilation.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of moving forward is a good way to do it because it kind of reinvents what modern Marvel cosmic is. And then, you know, as you get more used to it, you can always go further back to Celestial Madonna or to, you know, Infinity Gauntlet, which that'll be important in the new wave of Marvel stuff.
Yes. Oh, I have heard of that, Infinity Gauntlet. I do want to read it.
Oh, it's possibly one of my favorite comics ever.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. Celestial Madonna, Infinity Gauntlet, and all the Annihilation stuff. Okay, got it.
So, any just kind of final... I mean, I feel we haven't gone over too much the particulars of the story, but it's just... It's fun characters. It's some action, you know? No... I don't really feel there's anything that happens in the comic that's too overly surprising or too kind of, you know, like, that's mind-blowing that we got to analyze it from a deeper perspective.
Yes.
I kind of come away just thinking, like, it's a fun story with just, you know, the character interaction is really where it shines, is my kind of takeaway.
Yes. I would say that, you know, summing up my, you know, my very greenhorn experience with this comic is that it surprised me in many ways because, first of all, it's very different from what I thought Guardians of the Galaxy were. How did that come up? Guardians of the Galaxy was. And the characters that I had never seen before also were very strange and exciting because, like, that purple lady, I don't know what her name is.
Deathcry. Yeah, Deathcry, I think.
Yeah, that one, she had, like, this culture of her own and was so different from the other people. And she was so offended when Captain Universe, was that his name? When Captain Universe tried to save her. And that led to, like, this big problem. Spoiler alert! That kind of tore Captain Universe apart. And I thought that, I mean, that's, even though it doesn't really have a definitive plot, you know, all these events... kind of move the story forward. That's what is interesting about Annihilation, Conquest, Star-Lord.
Now, I got two kind of final questions. One of them is just, since you have kind of mentioned this makes you want to kind of read more, wanting to go back, for kind of like you, for fairly new readers, if not brand new readers, would you recommend this to them or say maybe start somewhere else?
Start somewhere else. Start with the backstory. But if you want to start with this one, maybe you could watch Guardians of the Galaxy first. So at least you know who Star-Lord is, who Groot is, kind of, and who Rocket Raccoon is.
I'm going to do a little bit of not selling you on something, because I feel bad, because I'm not getting any kickback for this, but one of the things they got, if you have a like a tablet, is, or even just a computer, is Marvel offers this service called Marvel Unlimited.
Okay, I have Googled that. And
I mean, from a guy who just loves comics and who wants to read a bunch of older comics, including Annihilation Conquest, Star-Lord, using Marvel Unlimited, you get access to anything they've scanned and put up there, going back from, '60s, '50s. It's thousands upon thousands of comics. Okay. And I forget how much the monthly fee is. I do like the yearly subscription for like the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, if someone wants to go deep into Marvel, right. I mean, it's, you know, I would definitely recommend going that way for it. Because it beats having to track stuff down. It's easy to kind of pick stuff up and sample. You think of like normally buying just one series.
Right.
Of comics would cost about like $10 to maybe get these four issues.
Right.
Or you're probably paying $10 a month for the unlimited, which you could read this and the whole thingy. So that's my spiel about it. Mm. The other big question, I feel kind of bad because we've completely neglected the art by Timothy Green.
Oh, okay.
Is our penciler and, yeah, Marvel.com doesn't list... Oh, there. And inker Victor Olazaba and colorist Nathan Fairbairn.
Okay. Remember, this is coming from someone who has not, like, read, you know, Marvel comics.
Yeah.
Like, real Marvel comics. I was really surprised when everything was in color. And it was, like, you know, gorgeous colors, like, not just, I don't know, it was, like, real. It was really colored. Yeah, so that was very surprising. So, and I think because I am so new to this, when I saw it, I was like, oh, it's colored. Wow, that's super awesome. And so this is a thing. This is Marvel's thing. Everything is colored.
Pretty much.
And I kind of didn't think that that was a big deal until maybe now. That it's probably taking someone a lot of work and many hours over a desk, coloring everything in. Well, and
I mean, it's great that you've actually mentioned the colors, because I would say within the last 5 to 10 years, coloring has gotten more and more important to comics.
Okay.
Coloring, basically American comics have almost always been in color.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, plenty of black and white ones still, but for the most part, color is the way it's done.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, in the last 10 years, people have been like, oh, you know what's good? Better coloring. And so now, I mean, colorists are considered more and more essential. You've got some big name pencilers and artists who have typically gotten all the glory, deserved or not, who are kind of being like, okay, you can hire me, but if you're going to hire me, I look best when you have this colorist. And if this, it's basically we're a package. If you want me and you want me to do the pencil art of this book, you need to bring in this colorist who really makes my stuff shine.
Right. Makes sense, because you want your stuff to look as good as it can.
Exactly.
Yes, and because I have not read, you know, I told you Archie comics were where I started with English comics, and those were fully colored, but not in the same way as these things.
Yeah.
And it's been a long time since Archie comics, and I had an encounter. So I have been reading, in between, I've been reading a lot of Japanese comics, and those are just black and white.
And every now and then for like a special collection, they'll do a few pages of coloring, but it's usually like a lot of those I've seen have kind of been like, here's a shade, like different tones of orange or something, or
Exactly. And even if they do add color, they call it one of the in-book art, art pieces, in-book art pieces, where they only have it inside of the cover, and it's like a little poster. That's all they do.
Or like, here's 3 pages of blah, blah, blah. Okay, those 3 pages are done. That's back to black and white.
Yeah. And so I was actually really, really impressed by the colors. I'm sorry if I'm not, like, you know, talking too much about the art, but the colors were what really stood out for me.
No, I mean, that's important. It's great. And I mean, as you can probably tell, even me, like, I can kind of be like, story and dialogue and characters and the art's pretty. Like, I'm still learning how to talk about comic book art. As if I can actually talk about comic book art. Like, here, I mean, I think Timothy Green here, he does a great job with the action scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I can always kind of tell how the flow happens.
Right.
You know, like, going from one panel to another, I'm left with that sense of, this is how things are happening. You know, I can see what's happening in between the panels, which, I mean, to me is nice storytelling.
Right.
Even That's in true. Even though all these characters, they're in silouette, they're in basically the same uniform, which I love the design of those uniforms. I mean, that's to me, like, one of the biggest disappointments of Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Is because of what happened. I'm not sure if the comics came before the movies when the kind of rebooted character designs, how that worked.
Yeah.
But we've lost these designs of the characters, and I think it just makes the team look great.
Right.
That kind of quasi-military, still slightly individual in places, but mostly a set look.
Right. Yes, I'm looking at them right now, and... You are right. That's absolutely right. And I'm looking at the action scenes as well, and I realize that, I mean, it's very belated, but there are some scenes which look exactly as how you would frame a scene in a movie. You know, they're drawn from such a perspective that is you normally wouldn't associate with regular non-action scenes, if I make any sense, and like, no one can see this but you and I, but like this one, you know, where
Universe and Deathcry are facing off.
Yes, and it's taken. You can see her flying, and you see the moon in the background.
No, it's great, and it's just. I mean, it's a beautiful piece of art. It's a perfectly chosen moment.
Yeah.
And just I love all the little the cross hatching. I'm not sure if that would be the inker Olazabo or if that would be Timothy Green. But I mean, and another thing I really like about this art is, so one of the things about comics is, sometimes when people, like, to me, a lot of this art, even though it is stylized at times, it still looks fairly realistic. It doesn't look, you know, like, cartoony, necessarily.
Yes. But yes.
I like, and I'm not, I don't really sway one way, like, it must be realistic or it must be cartoony. I think both of those have their merits.
Yes.
This one definitely goes for more realism. But what I like about what Timothy Green does here is that even though it's realistic, he does a great job of giving us expressions and making the characters on the page act.
And exactly. Oh, yes. Can I say something?
Oh, please.
Groot, you know, he doesn't really have very humanoid features, but you could tell when he was angry, you know, and when he was being a diva. Same goes for Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah.
Not exactly, you know, human-y, but
not exactly.
But you could tell the expressions really, you know, that like there are some parts that do not have dialogue. So those really came through.
Yes. And I mean, for me, that's one of the things I love about a good comics artist. And you'd be surprised at some of the, like, major comics that come out with an artist who, they draw beautiful, beautiful images of static poses where the heroes look heroic and the damsels look damselly, but everything just kind of still looks that flatness. And even though I'll have to look. I don't think Timothy Green has actually done a great deal of big stuff. And probably someone out there going like, "You're an idiot. He's doing stuff all the time." But he does. I mean, I just love the expressions he gives. Feels that perfect amount of blend between here's some realism and here's just, you know, some fun expressions to go with it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, unless you have any last words you want to add?
Last words?
For the comic?
For the comic. Go read it, everyone!
I like it. Then I hope our listeners have had a fabulous time. I know I've had a fun time talking with Lydia here. Yay. Now, if people want to hear more from you,
yeah.
Where is there a place they can go?
Of course there is. you can find me on YouTube. My channel name is Quek Channel. That's Q-U-E-K for my surname. Q-U-E-K Channel, Quek Channel. And I do videos on Wednesdays and Fridays. Excellent. I talk about all sorts of things. Yes, let's be friends.
Let's do it. All right, well, I had a great time talking with you. I hope you can come back in the future, because, you know, we actually read two comics, and maybe in the next week or so we'll be able to talk about the other one, which I think the next comic might be a little bit more new reader friendly. What about you?
Definitely. I am so excited to talk about the other one, because excellent. I really like the other one so much.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. And as a teaser, I think it's safe to say, think small, ladies and gentlemen. Think small.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I really, 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 really enjoyed myself.
Excellent. And thank you all for listening. Again, this is Comics League International. If you listen through iTunes, please take a brief moment to rate it and review it. Share it with people. Tell about it. It's only basically through word of mouth or through word of Facebook that this show can grow. It's an infant in the terms of comics podcast, but hopefully you had fun with it. And if you got a moment and enjoyed me just kind of rambling about comics with guests, why don't you go to deadlytroubadour.com? That's my blog. I put up little writings, and I also just review different comics, TV shows, and anything that hits my fancy. Okay, so thank you for listening, and thank you, Lydia.
Thank you, Brent.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.